This is sex.
Everyone gets what they want.
This is sexploration.
Explore.
Play.
This is sexploration with Monica.
Sex is proof that God loves us and wants us to have fun.
Sexploration with Monica on FCCFreeRadio.com.
Tonight we'll be talking about sexual empowerment and misinformation. Not only the kind of misinformation that we kind of pass around accidentally, maybe as children, about, oh my God, doing it. What is it anyway? And some of the things that we're going to talk about are a little bit edgy tonight. So instead of just, I think a lot of people think, oh, well, sex is done with either a penis or a vagina. And now that we're learning more and delving deeper into sexuality, we're finding that some people's favorite erogenous zone is their earlobe. So, you know, your entire body is a wonderland. And so we're here to explore it. I'm excited to have Charlie Glickman back on Sexploration with Monica. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So Charlie did his doctoral dissertation on sexual shame and does PR at Good Vibrations. And you're teaching this amazing class with Aislinn Immersion.
That was pretty
Immersion.
Good. Immersion, that's
Immersion.
Perfect.
Okay. I'm like, immersion? No. Okay. Aislinn Immersion. And you are a sex educator in your own right. You did peer education at your college and a couple of workshops, also have taught about prostate play before.
That's true.
And you're both teaching a class next weekend, Sunday, at the Looking Glass in Oakland.
That's correct.
Cool. So what inspired you to start a class about this? Because, you know, many people don't really want to, you know, most people, they're like, oh, my pooper.
It's
kind
true.
Of a one of those things that they're like, oh, I don't know how to talk about that. I can't even admit that I like it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I like it. Do I like it?
So the prostate has been getting quite a lot of attention lately as an erogenous zone. I think that books such as The Ultimate Guide to Anal Sex for Men and videos such as Bend Over Boyfriend have really paved the way for men to explore anal pleasure. And there's a common idea that men, and especially straight men, don't enjoy. Actually, there's a common idea that no one enjoys it. It's sort of the myth that, yeah, that it's always painful and that people only ever do it in order to please their partners on the receiving end and that it doesn't feel good. So books such as the one that I mentioned and the video that I mentioned have really paved the way for anal pleasure for men. And that has sort of led a lot of men, I think, to discover the prostate gland, which is accessible through the front wall of the rectum and feels distinctly different from the kind of pleasure that you get when you press in other areas of the rectum.
Hmm. So you actually said a lot in there, because I think that there are a lot of things that people think about anal sex. First of all, that it hurts,
mm-hmm,
and that it makes you gay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh my God, you know, if I have butt sex, if especially if I'm on the receiving end, then, you know, I'm clearly a homosexual, which, can we talk a little bit about that? Does it make you gay?
Well, yeah, it's an interesting thing. I read a survey a few months ago. And one of the anecdotes that they quoted some high school students, and they were talking about this exact thing. And quite a few of them were adamant that heterosexual men who like being on the giving end of anal sex, it must mean that they're gay, even though they're doing it with a female partner.
Which is confusing, because what? It's a girl that you're doing it with. But I can see also why they would believe that.
They've internalized this idea that, mm-hmm, anal sex equals homosexuality.
Right.
On the flip side, just recently, there was a study that came out from Indiana University. They surveyed gay men, or men who have sex with men, regardless of their identification, and asked them about their most recent sexual experiences. And roughly 40% of them engaged in anal intercourse the last time they had sex.
Oh.
So it's common, certainly more common than in other gender combinations, but not nearly as universal as a lot of people think.
How do we define, then, what being gay is about, because there's people who identify as MSMs, right? Is that what men who sleep with men, they don't actually call themselves gay, but they do sleep with men?
Well, usually MSM is used to describe men who have sex with men.
Mm-hmm. It could be bisexual men.
Well, that, and it's also sometimes within the context of heterosexually identified men who have sex with other men, sometimes anonymously, sometimes not, but their primary relationship orientation and even their primary sexual orientation is towards women, but sometimes they like to go and give another guy a blowjob. So it's the whole question of identity versus behavior.
Behavior, right. Our token straight guy is the rock and roll nurse from Backspins Thursdays.
Howdy.
6 to 8, Studio 2B. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, I just to jump in a little bit here, I kind of think, I don't know, when you talk about anal sex being gay or something, it kind of doesn't compute to me, because I think of a continuum.
Right. There, that's a healthy way to think about it.
Very few people are 100% straight or 100% gay. Usually it's somewhere in between. I think there's a lot of different possibilities, a lot of different combinations. But it's interesting, the studies that they show that the public at large seems to, or at least men, seem to be really struggling with the idea of, am I one or the other?
Right.
And not willing to accept the possibility that might be both.
Right.
Well, might I think be some that combination
partially comes from a culture where the worst thing a young man could be is gay. You know, he's teased by his peers. You know, even if he doesn't throw correctly, or, you know, has zero homosexual inklings whatsoever, but just talks with a lisp, or, you know, whatever, wears the wrong color of shirt.
That was
that
me.
Is so gay.
That was
right?
me in
and
high school.
Really,
I was the faggot in the class, and it was so funny, because I've never, to me, what would make me bisexual or gay would be if I fantasized about men,
right.
Which I haven't done.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not about men at all. I always dream and fantasize about women. But I was the faggot, which then became, I kind of reconciled that by saying, well, it's really not, they're not talking about sex here. They're talking about something else, and I don't really understand
masculinity.
And I don't want to lecture them about it, because I think they're wrong.
And when we're talking about this in reference to prostate play, there's a few issues that come up quite often that we've certainly heard lots of men and their partners talk about. One is that this is going to make me gay, or
right.
this means that I'm secretly gay, or something along those
right.
lines.
And it's a horrible fear.
A second one, which goes right alongside that, is that to be penetrated puts you in the quote-unquote woman's role. And that's a bad thing for guys to be. And then the third one is that penetration is necessarily an act of dominance and submission.
Right.
So you get all three of these ideas wrapping around each other. And so it's no wonder that so many men are afraid to try this. And it's unfortunate, because it means that they miss out on a lot of good times.
And isn't it something like, if you have more prostate stimulation, you are perhaps less likely to get prostate cancer? Or I've seen some studies about numbers of ejaculations, like the more you ejaculate.
That's an interesting question. There's been a lot of attention lately given to the possible health benefits of prostate massage. I have to say that while I would love to say that we definitely know that prostate massage is great for your health, a lot of the studies are somewhat inconclusive. There are some mixed studies that it's just not quite clear. Now, some things that are almost certain to be beneficial about prostate massage is that it feels good. Feeling good kicks up your endorphins and that sort of thing. And generally, massage has the benefit of increasing circulation, blood flow and all that. And that can have the benefit of simply supporting the healthy, normal function of the tissue. Hmm. Whether or not that will reduce your risk of, say, prostate cancer or prostatitis, it is yet to be seen, but it's entirely possible.
But I haven't seen any literature that suggests it would increase the possibility.
It's bad for
it
you.
It may not decrease, but I don't think it, it doesn't go the other way at all.
Well, and some of the studies that Monica was talking about were more looking at how often men ejaculated and then looking at their risk of prostate cancer later on. But one of the things that makes those studies tricky to interpret is that a higher level of testosterone increases your sex drive, which would mean you'd have more sex, but it can also increase your risk for prostate cancer.
Oh, really?
So figuring out what the causal factors are with these kinds of studies over the span of 20 or 30 years of somebody's life is difficult at best.
So the other thing about prostate play that we should talk about is I think a lot of people think that anal sex hurts.
This is true.
Aislinn?
I'm very happy you brought that up. A lot of people do have that idea, and we would like to be very clear that while it certainly can, quite a lot of folks have had unpleasant experiences where anal penetration was painful, it doesn't have to. Now, Charlie's going to want to add a point here. Do you want to jump in?
I bet I know what you want me
yes,
to be saying here.
Yes, I bet you
this
do.
This is the porn thing, isn't it? Is this about porn or is this about anal sex never having to hurt?
Yes.
So a lot of sex educators, my colleagues, will say that anal sex never has to hurt. And there's two directions that you can go with that. Sometimes people interpret that to mean that anybody can have comfortable, pleasurable anal penetration. And that's also not true. It might not be your cup of tea. Maybe you've had an injury. Maybe you are a survivor of sexual assault or trauma. So when I say that anal sex never has to hurt, sometimes what that means is you don't do it.
Right.
But if you don't like it,
you can stop.
Exactly. If it hurts, something needs to change, either a different technique or you just find something else to do. There's plenty of other fun ways to have sex.
More lube, go slowly. That's
important. A different digit.
Radiation down. Pinky finger.
One of the things that can lead to painful anal play, too, is that a lot of people copy what they see in porn. And what you don't realize, well, there's a few things that you don't realize. One is that warm-up and lubrication happen. They just happen before the camera gets turned on. Another thing is that the people who make porn generally are professionals. They do this a lot.
They've had a lot of practice.
The more you practice, the easier it is to do.
Mm.
I always like to say that learning to have sex from watching porn would be like learning to drive from watching a car chase movie.
Right.
Somebody is going to get hurt.
Right.
So, you know, get the fantasy out of porn, but get the information from workshops like ours or the books or DVDs that Aislinn mentioned earlier.
So are you going to have like some diagrams and you're going to do some hand gestures, or how are you going to show people how to do prostate play
Definitely.
In this workshop?
We're going to have a fairly in-depth discussion of anatomy and where the prostate sits in relation to the other stuff that's going on in there. And we're going to describe a number of techniques both to comfortably and pleasurably get into the rectum, and then how to find the gland, how to locate it physically, and then what to do with it when you find it, what sorts of strokes it enjoys and what sorts of strokes might not be as pleasurable.
Because it's kind of like the male G-spot. It's in there somewhere, and you kind of have to find it, and there's textures, and there's sort of a general location, though everyone is different. Does it also change with arousal, like where it is in the body, does it?
It doesn't move necessarily in the same way that a lot of people find with the G-spot, but with arousal, it definitely engorges. It gets bigger, which makes it easier to find. In fact, the G-spot and the prostate are remarkably similar in terms of how they respond to sexual pleasure. So if you're familiar with one, you can figure out how to do the other.
Is it also like up and on the ceiling and you kind of do the come hither thing? Or are you not doing that?
It's a finger's distance inside on both of them, which is remarkably convenient.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
There's no reason why they couldn't be 6 inches inside and then a finger wouldn't reach them quite so easily. So,
interesting.
I personally take that as a sign that this is something we could all be doing.
Really?
Yes. It's a sign from God that
really?
This is natural.
I like to think of the prostate as the back end of the penis, basically. That's pretty much where it's located. If you follow the urethra in, you have the erectile bodies of the penis, and then there's a little bit of muscle separating it from the prostate, and then there's the prostate. Hmm. And so in some ways, it's sort of like, well, really it is, that you are stimulating a genital structure.
Right.
If you kind of think of having a head of the penis at the back end, sometimes that's another nice way to imagine it.
I'm trying to picture now all the guy stuff, and they're all kind of crowded in there and Interesting.
I'm thinking double dong, but that's...
it's not too inaccurate an image.
Okay. Right. The clitoris is really huge. It goes all the way back to, I think, the spinal column or something. Like, and there's legs. This clitoris has legs, and it's all just... There's lots of clitoris that we don't really know about, just thinking that it's this tiny little speck, you know? But yeah, it's interesting that the prostate and the penis go deeper as well. What are some of the things that you find are common misconceptions that people have about anal play? Charlie?
Quite a few. There's a lot. I mean, we've already mentioned that it's going to hurt or that it's going to make you gay.
Doesn't have to. Doesn't make you gay.
another one is that it is dirty. And for obvious reasons, you do need to be a little bit more careful with cleanliness. But, you know, slip on a glove. And it's nice and easy. Take the glove off inside out. You don't have to worry about putting your hand down on the pillow or on somebody's hair or something like that. It doesn't take a lot to make anal play nice and easy to do. You don't have to worry about the mess. Some other misconceptions. That it's going to cause long-term medical health issues. I've talked with a lot of men and even quite a few doctors who believe that if you do anal sex regularly, you're going to be incontinent, you're going to
permanently
stretch
out. Right, that it'll stretch out your rectum.
Yeah, rectal prolapse.
Yeah.
But which is not related, I've heard.
Not at all. I do know some people who had traumatic experiences of sexual assault from anal sex, or they were engaging in really rough anal sex under the influence of drugs and they didn't realize they were doing damage. But if you are more or less sober so that you can pay attention to what's going on, you know, it's not going to cause a problem like that. I know people who have been doing anal sex for 30 or 40 years of their lives, and they're in great health.
I have one more common misconception that I'd like to toss in, which is not so much related to anal penetration as it is to specifically prostate stimulation, which is some folks hear about the prostate, and they are in the age range of men who have had prostate exams to check for prostate cancer. And then they say, well, I had my prostate checked by the doctor, and it didn't feel good at all. And
and so therefore I must not like
yes, exactly.
prostate
therefore,
massage.
Yes, therefore I'm not into prostate play. And of course, that would be very much like... a woman who goes to the gynecologist doesn't
right.
feel any pleasure at all and then says, well, I must not really like having my vagina penetrated.
Right. No, if that was your only experience of vaginal penetration, you would not be that into it.
Yes.
Yeah, doctors are not really kind, generally. Well, I've heard, well, at least the prostate exams I've had.
Well, and even more than that, doctors, they don't want it to feel pleasurable because
right?
they don't want to risk being sued for sexual harassment.
Isn't that weird? That, like,
yeah.
if it feels good, then they're afraid that you're going to sue them.
So they actually get trained.
Creepy.
They don't want it to hurt.
Right.
But they actually get trained on how to do pelvic exams that are not pleasurable.
Right. Walking the fine line.
Oh, my God. They actually
not
do
hurting.
It on purpose.
It's part of the
they're
training.
Not feeling
so.
Good at all.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a great point, Aislinn. If you've gotten your prostate examined by the doctor and you didn't enjoy it, don't let that scare you off.
Totally wow. different in the context of a sexual encounter.
I want to talk a little bit more about health. How to prevent bacterial vaginosis or any kind of like bacterial infections when you're doing anal play. Sometimes if it gets involved in the vagina, that can be really bad. What are some things to prevent that?
Well, one of them is be really careful about cross-contamination. So never go from anal play to vaginal play without changing gloves or washing your hands really thoroughly. I've also talked with folks who were doing anal play with a woman on the receiving end, and she was on her hands and knees, and they were using so much lubricant that it ran downward
right.
and got into her vagina from later activities.
Right.
So being a little careful about that kind of thing can go a long way. And for anal play, even if you're fluid bonded, you don't use condoms for other types of sex. For anal intercourse, I still recommend using a condom because I've heard from some men who got bladder infections from bacteria getting inside their urethras.
Right.
So there are a few basic safety tips, but again, once you hear the explanation, it's kind of obvious.
If you're educated.
And thinking about it and sober enough to be able to pay attention to what's going on.
Right. Let's talk about, you know, being able to pay attention and communicating with your partner. Because I imagine that with something that you're trying new and it's kind of like this kind of black belt stimulation, that extra consciousness is in order, both with yourself and with your partner.
Well, and, you know, it's an interesting thing because a lot of people are nervous about anal play. They're worried about it hurting, so they'll have a few beers or a few glasses of
right,
wine.
Right, of course.
And, you know, that's when you're in a situation where you might not be paying attention.
Right.
You know,
your judgment's diminished. You don't have as much pain sensitivity. You may not feel it if something's going wrong.
Exactly. And, you know, the interesting thing is that one of the key ingredients for successful anal penetration is the ability to relax. But the anal muscles in the pelvic floor are highly responsive to our emotions and our moods, which is why when we get upset or stressed out, our pelvic floor tightens up. There's a reason why people who are angry all the time are called tight asses.
Because you unconsciously clench your pelvic floor when you're upset?
Just like a scared cat or dog tucks their tail.
Mm. Interesting.
It's a very similar set of muscles.
So if you're not feeling relaxed, your sphincter is going to be like, no, thank you.
And even exactly. And even using numbing creams or whatnot, they don't actually help the muscles relax. They just mean you're not feeling the tension. And, you know, people can get hurt.
So the sorts of things that make you relax that might be healthy would be pleasure.
Getting turned on. Do things you already like.
Taking nice deep breaths.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And talking through it.
Talking
Lots of communication.
It.
Discussing your concerns.
Yeah. And practice.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
trying
absolutely.
It again some other time, maybe later. It's okay. We'll
breather.
Just do something else.
And that's a really important one. Letting go of being goal-oriented. Even people who are anal aficionados have nights when it just doesn't work. And if you become so invested in a particular activity or toy or intercourse or whatever it might be, that can actually get in the way. It's kind of a Zen sort of thing. You have to let go of your attachment to increase the odds of getting what you want.
Right. Mm. The Chinese finger trap of desire, orgasm, arousal, and anal.
Exactly.
The more you try to pull your fingers out, the more it's not going to work.
Except if we're going in.
Yes, exactly. Except for that you're going. So just just feel free to try it later. No worry.
Well, one thing I'd like to add, though, on the flip side is it's also common for the partner on the giving end to maybe not berate the receiver, but to say things like, oh, just relax, baby. Now, I don't know about you, but when I'm stressed out, if somebody comes up to me and says, just relax, I get more tense.
Right.
So ease off on that.
And then angry as well. Whole other layer of emotion.
If you would not be poking something into my rectum, maybe I would relax. Exciting. Yeah. So is there anything else that you have in store for your workshop on Sunday the 29th?
Well, we are going to be giving people all the information they need to start off doing prostate play and anal play, talking about toys, positions, fantasies, everything from A to Z. And
that's a lot.
You know, it's a lot, but we talk fast.
But that's mostly because we're thinking about anal, and then we think all the way down to Z, from A, and then what could possibly be Z?
And I'd also like to mention that our workshop is open to all different kinds of people. It's totally open to men who sleep with men, as well as men and women who want to do this together, and even trans women.
And lesbians.
And lesbians.
Lesbians, if they have someone who has a prostate that they want to play with, then absolutely
they're
welcome.
Oh my God, that's right, because women don't have prostates.
Unless you count the G-spot as a prostate, technically no.
Tricky. Okay, but women still like anal sex, right?
Yes.
Even though we don't have a prostate. What's going on there, actually? My inquiring mind would like to know.
Mm-hmm. So there are definitely nerves in the anus and the rectum that are sensitive in women and men. And in addition to that, it is likely that, certainly for men, when the prostate is being stimulated, that there are the nerves of the pelvic plexus that are being stimulated. And those are also the nerves that are likely to be involved in G-spot play. And incidentally, they're also the nerves that connect to the rectum. So there's quite a lot of things that could be happening there. It has actually been speculated that in addition to the nerves of the anus and rectum in women, there might actually be pleasure that comes from anal penetration as a result of the genital tissue being basically come at from a different angle.
And I've even talked to women who enjoyed indirect G-spot stimulation through the rectal wall.
Interesting. So it's just another way of getting at the... Right.
Not to mention that during orgasm, the anal muscles contract pretty much in sync with the vaginal muscles. So having a finger or a toy or something inside the anus can intensify the sensations of orgasm.
That's a good point. The sphincter muscles are among the muscles that contract during orgasm.
Right. Yes. The muscular contractions that you...
You can't see this if you're listening, but Monica just did a little hand gesture. That goes along.
I made an O with my hand, and then I clenched it very fast. Tick, 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 tick,
very cute.
So, Charlie Glickman, Aislinn Emirzian.
Emirzian.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Find more about the workshop at charlieglickman.com. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to more stuff from you guys.
We'll be back. We're looking forward to it.
Indeed.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being on the show. Charlie Glickman and Aislinn Emirzian. Yes! Got it right this time.
Third time the charm.
Yes. Okay, so as we kind of change places and move around here in the studio, I will plug your show one more time. Token Straight Guy, Rock and Roll Nurse, Backspins, Thursdays, 6 to 8 p.m., Studio 2B. What you got cooking next week?
I'm doing mixtapes. My dream mixes. I did the 60s, 70s, and next week is the 80s.
Oh, fun. You know, I used to do a show called 80s at 8.
No, I didn't know
that. I love the 80s. It's so radical.
Yeah, but my version of the 80s might be a little tougher than in your version. But there will be some new
wave. You mean more hardcore.
More hardcore. Yeah, hardcore.
Yeah, I did like the Devo, I must say. With Jessie Fisher, she's also known as the Sexademic, and she's now officially Professor Fisher. She is doing a lot of different stuff. A very exciting thing that she just did was you got called down to Cambridge University, flew over to England, was in this big hall. I watched it on YouTube. It was awesome. You were debating with
Gail Dines.
Yeah, who is like the anti-porn feminist.
Yeah, she's, and actually, I think it was Catherine McKinnon was also there at the debate.
Ooh.
And Catherine McKinnon was kind of like Gail Dines, but back in the 80s.
Ah.
Her and Andrea Dworkin, they kind of formed this unholy feminist alliance with the religious right to attack pornography. And they put these laws in effect, these censorship laws on obscenity that were... They were so strict. They passed in Canada, but not in the U.S., but they were so strict that their own books became banned in Canada.
Oh, their own books.
For their description of pornography.
Oh, the irony.
Yes, the irony.
Right. So, I mean, okay. So feminism, I think sometimes it's coming from a pretty good place, even though it can be so angry. Gail Dines' thing was really angry.
Here's the thing about feminism. I mean, feminism is a term is kind of like saying, well,
big umbrella.
Christianity.
Right, yeah.
Really, really big umbrella. There are a lot of like schisms within the feminist movement, and the longer that this movement's gone on, the more schisms that come into it.
Right.
And you will have a lot of groups of feminists who, you know, are violently opposed, not violently, but very opposed to one another's ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And there are pro-porn feminists and there are anti-porn feminists. And it's really interesting. For a long time, I think the reason that people associate feminism with explicitly an anti-pornography stance is because McKinnon and Dworkin, anytime they had a debate somewhere, if they were debating another feminist, they would cancel their appearance.
Oh.
And so it was like a really brilliant strategy from a PR standpoint, because they were the only ones ever representing a feminist voice. And they were always on the anti-pornography side.
Right.
And so it created
this idea that all feminists are negative about porn.
Because the pro-porn feminists never actually got to go up and speak about it. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. There's a really good book from... It's Nadine Strausen. It's called Defending Pornography. She was the head of the ACLU for a while, I believe. And it's a brilliant book. It was written in like the 90s, but a lot of the arguments that she talks about, they're still really relevant today.
So talking about porn, I mean, you won the debate.
Yes.
But it seems like there's been some fallout being associated with pro-porn.
Yeah. I feel like I kind of had to change my path a little bit after I went out and I took like a very publicly pro-porn stance, because the work that I was wanting to do, the work in high schools and being a sex educator in a high school, any programs that I would want to work with would be nonprofits. And the finances that come into nonprofits are very much at the whim of the politics of the people who are giving them money.
Mm-hmm. So, government grants, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and so if they were to, they don't want to hire anyone that would make them worry about one of the people giving them grants being upset with the way the program is being run.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It totally does.
Yeah. So.
So it's, you're having to change your focus from youth education, age appropriate, medically accurate, that sort of thing. I mean, not that you would be telling them all about porn, certainly.
I mean, I taught at a high school for 3 years and I did sex ed there. And it was an alternative high school, so it wasn't bound by the same restrictions as public schools. And I was allowed a very free curriculum. We talked about, you know, like LGBTQ rights. We talked about all kinds of stuff around sexuality. And we did, if they had questions about porn, you know, I would talk to them about it.
The difference between good porn and bad porn.
No, yeah, even that, just like, what do they think of it? Like, how does it affect them? Like, how do they think it relates to the sex that they have? Like, or the sex they imagine one day having?
Yeah, like, that's true,
that's a really appropriate
conversation
to have with them. Like, what does this mean to you?
Right.
Yeah.
And one thing that comes to my mind is that porn is not all one thing. People tend to talk about it like it is all one thing, but it has a crazy, varied history going way back to the beginning of time, of human time.
Of writing, and exactly.
And there have been points where women have been really exploited in the porn industry. So porn is not all one thing or the other. And then erotica is kind of like a subset, but it sort of is porn, but it's not porn.
What's the difference between erotica and pornography? Is it just that erotica is what I like, and
yeah,
pornography,
I don't know,
is,
you know,
whatever thing you like?
I'm never quite clear on
lighting,
that.
Lighting? Maybe lighting's the difference?
We had a big, long conversation about this with the Eroticos Film Festival a couple weeks ago, and we decided that it was the amount of time that you spend on the plot with an algorithm that also includes whether or not it's explicit and you see the sex or it's implied sex. Like, so if there's a lot of, like, you know, the ice cube melting, the liquid pouring over the skin, and you're moving down into an unknown cleft of flesh, that would be erotica, whereas...
But what if it starts as that? And then, you know, it goes into a prostate play scene.
I would
an
love that.
One. I mean,
could,
like,
it please do that for once?
I honestly feel the terms erotica and the terms pornography, they just kind of seem to be used to people's, like, for people's politics, for their own politics. If they want something to be considered acceptable, call it erotica. If they want it to be considered unacceptable, call it pornography. And the definitions of pornography, it's constantly been a moving target.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at what was considered, you know, obscenity, 70 years ago or something like that, it's completely
changed.
It's
someone in a shorts outfit.
Yeah. Yeah. A really good book that I would recommend is actually called, The Secret Museum by Walter Kendricks. He's a historian, and he wrote a book all about the invention of the very concept of pornography. And it really didn't even come about until like the 1800s during the Victorian era. They had to come up with a term to describe the murals they were unearthing in Pompeii that was like, you know, a 6-foot wide mural of people fucking, like, out on a main street, and they had to explain like what this was, like, how could this make
how
sense?
Could this be okay in the context of this old culture?
Well, talking about pornography as a moving picture phenomenon, and I am kind of a film buff. I've made some documentaries, so I've thought about this a lot, and I actually have a friend who was in the porn industry in the 70s in Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's changed
and
a lot.
It's changed a whole lot, because it used to be you had to buy film, it was expensive, and you had to have technicians who knew what they were doing. Now anybody with a camera, even just a phone with a camera on it, can make a porn movie. And I think that's actually been really great and really freeing and really exciting in a way. It's made it more interesting, more varied, and also less tied to like the mafia and other organizations, yep, that aren't so wonderful.
Have you read that book, The Other Hollywood?
I have not.
It's an oral history of the porn industry.
Ooh.
It's, yeah, it was done by this guy from Spin Magazine. I think he was one of the founders of it. Oh. And they basically take
Ruccione,
these clips. Maybe.
Because no. His father was the guy who did Penthouse magazine.
Maybe. Mm. I don't know. But this guy had something to do with Spin Magazine. But it's called The Other Hollywood. It's super engrossing book, really entertaining. And it's really enlightening about, like, you know, the good sides and the bad sides, mm-hmm, of the porn industry and how it evolved. And it did. There were massive mafia ties. But it was because it was something that, you know, it was illicit.
And
you
and
make
expensive.
It illicit, like, yeah, and criminals are going to, they're going to go try and,
right,
capitalize
if you,
on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's another thing that I liked about your speech at Cambridge was that you were talking about, Gail Dines was talking about the misogyny that was, you know, kind of rampant in most kinds of porn. But you said that it was endemic in our culture, that it wasn't just, I mean, maybe it's subtler some other places, you know, maybe you see it more clearly when you're watching porn, yeah, films, but that there are some good things about porn, that it is a catalyst for, yeah, desire.
Well, I think it's more of a medium than anything else. I mean, another thing I said in the debate is anybody can pick up a video camera and make porn, and mm-hmm, the end result of what you see has to do more with the person watching it, what it means to them, the way that the people made it and what they wanted to express with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do so much with that. You have people that do political pornography, which I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's
political pornography?
Yes. I went down to Spain after the Cambridge debate. Or no, I was in London. It was a woman who was up there from Barcelona, and I went to this like kind of punk rock underground like screening of some political pornography. And you know, it was interesting. She talked, what she called it, like post-porner or something like that. And it was, one of the clips was her morphing into an animal in a front yard, like really morphing and like growling at the camera while she slowly stripped her clothes off and went wild and then climbed a tree.
Hmm.
And
that's
this
awesome.
Is considered porn.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds interesting to me. I kind of like the more artsy porn stuff. Yeah.
Well, that definitely would be artistic.
Filmmakers like Sue Friedrich who are kind of, maybe they're not really pornographic. I don't know. Maybe it's erotica, but exploring like the sexuality of nuns, that sort of thing, which I think is kind of, I don't know. It's kind of nuns. Unusual,
okay,
topic, but
sure, why not?
But it's been done really in interesting ways that,
right,
I think is thought provoking and kind of makes you think, like, what are my preconceptions, and maybe they're all wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
So after shaking hands with the idea of the porn industry and being a pro-porn feminist, so instead of working on, you know, sex ed for kids, now you said that you're taking on the real issues that are impacting sexuality. Sexism, anxiety, shame, willful misinformation, and restrictive ideology. I wanted to talk about especially willful misinformation.
Willful misinformation. I mean, have you ever heard of the phenomena of the confirmation bias before?
Yes.
Yeah. People.
What you see in the world.
What you see in the world, people will tend to see what they want. Mm-hmm. They have a preconceived notion, and that preconceived notion is very precious to them because, you know, it constructs their reality. And so they want to see things that confirm their bias, that confirm their way
of
thinking.
You will notice things that,
yeah,
reinforce your beliefs about what you think is already true.
Yes.
So you're going to be like, see, totally the guys with the tattoos are always getting into fights.
Exactly.
Because that's what I'm noticing.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So what about, do you think that people are saying, well, see, sexuality has a bad effect on you and this is why you shouldn't be open? Or how do you think that this is affecting our, like, real lives, the misinformation that we're getting about sexuality? Where do you see it, and how do you think that we can deconstruct it?
I think with sex in our culture, in the public discourse, there's too much talk and not enough conversation. I feel like there's a lot of noise about sex and a lot of people trumpeting the way that they live their lives sexually instead of really having a conversation about sexuality. And I do believe, and I'm saying this as somebody that's totally involved with like sex education, there's like almost, there's almost too much discussion and arguing about it.
Not it's enough.
I think a lot of it
really
has
listening
to do with, yeah, and a lot of it's just like culture wars between groups. Mm-hmm. People wanting to win a culture war and impose their beliefs on another person.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there is still sexism going on in sexuality?
Yeah. Oh, sex. I mean, yeah. We're looking at, you know, thousands and thousands of years of women as second-class citizens, and we are just starting to get out of that right now. I think it would be naive to think that that's
in the
just,
last
you know,
40 years
going to go away in just the, in like gone, a couple right of lifetimes. I think it will take mm-hmm more time, and especially, you know, when times are unsure, like especially when times are economically unsure or politically unsure, I see people wanting to turn back to that, you know, kind of misogynistic, sexist, older way of thinking and kind of romanticizing good old days because it seems safe and it seems familiar. Right. And so like,
when men were men.
Yes. When
and women were women
in the kitchen. You know how
yeah
it goes.
Yeah. Feminine and did what I said.
Yeah.
So working with the information, I think one of the things that kind of counters some of the misinformation in this world is SFISI, San Francisco Sex Information.
Yep.
And that's a group close and near and dear to you. What's the mission of SFISI?
SFISI seeks to provide confidential, free, anonymous, non-judgmental sex information.
And they have a hotline.
They have a hotline. They've been around since the 1970s. Mm-hmm. They are a long-standing San Francisco institution.
They turn people into sex educators.
Yeah, they have two trainings a year, one in the spring, one in the fall. You can apply and you can go through, people call it sex ed boot camp.
Right.
It's like,
it's very intense.
It's very
it's like
intense.
8 hours a day.
All
weekend.
All weekend. I think they're alternating weekends out because people are starting to get a little bit burnt out because it's pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
But so they do those trainings.
And it's a huge paradigm shift, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. For a lot of people, it's a huge paradigm shift.
Right.
And it's like a lot of information like all at once. But
sure.
But
is this sex ed just for high school students or is it for adults and
for anyone because, who calls the hotline?
Because
there's
a lot of ignorance. Yeah.
Yeah. No, they train you there. There is a whole portion they go over about age appropriate sex education, the topics that you're going to want to talk about, what's going to make sense for their, you know, intellectual development.
Oh, if a child calls you or okay a teenager
yeah
calls you or an
yeah
adult
San
calls
Francisco
you.
San Francisco Sex Information, they're not mandated reporters. So anybody can call in.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, their problem could be like somebody who was older than them slept with them or they're like have an older partner or something like that or some abuse happened.
Mm.
And they don't have to report it. It's just a place where people can call
mm-hmm
and get information no matter what.
Sounds very intense.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of questions from people all over the spectrum of, I mean, because it's nationwide. If
nationwide.
You
can email.
Cool.
And you can get your questions answered that way.
And so with, is it, and people can call, like not only, so it, are there SFISIs in every, like in a lot of different places or
it's
San Francisco, right?
San Francisco Sex Information.
Right.
And it is in San Francisco.
And so, but people know about it in other places and call in or they
yeah
could if they
yeah
wanted
no, no,
to.
Yeah, no, you totally get calls in from places all over. And I mean, I think definitely like the most kind of heartwarming calls, when you live in the Bay Area sex educator bubble, you sometimes lose sight of and forget how little information and contact with any of that that a lot of people, like, they just don't have it. So getting a call from somebody who's living in some rural area in, like, the Bible Belt, it can be really, really meaningful because they might be very scared about what they're feeling or they might be really scared about what they're going through. And for them, like, it's a really invaluable resource to just have somebody to talk to about it.
Right. Are you going to be manning the sex information booth at the SFISI fundraiser tomorrow?
So to speak. Womanly.
No, I was signed up.
Yes,
I was signed
humaning.
Up for, I might be jumping in. My friend Violet Blue is going to be down there too, and Woo. I think we might go in and go tag team in the booth a little bit. we have people set up, and they're going to be there from 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. in the upstairs area. They'll have their own little booth marked as science, but we'll probably go relieve them at some point. But most
just for funsies.
Just for funsies. Most of the night, though, I've been doing this event. This is its fifth year,
mm-hmm.
and I head it up from the top to the bottom. Mm. I plan everything. I oversee everything. I get everything together. The
lighting, and it's called Burlesque.
Burlesque. We have DJs. We have burlesque dancers. The lineup is really good this year. We got David Harness. He is kind of a local San Francisco house music legend.
Mm-hmm.
Kitty Von Quim is going to be doing like a Godzilla
Ooh.
Number. She's going to be doing a little burlesque act. Then we've got somebody that's going to be doing a bunny one. That'll be Mickey Finn. And then Mickey Finn, Dante Damone, they're going to do a little act up.
The guys from the Rebel Kings.
Yes, from right. the Rebel Kings.
And the Electro Dolls.
And the Electro Dolls. Those are our in-house go-go dancers.
Oh, fun.
And we start tomorrow. I have to get up and get a cargo van and get all of our right. lighting gear and get all of our decoration, and then we're gonna spend
make the party sparkly.
It's gonna pop. The idea, it's an animal theme, and so what I decided I wanted to do was to create a forest inside the venue. So we are bringing in like branches and plant manner, and we're doing supplemental lighting all over the place, and we're going to try and turn it into a forest.
Cool. This is at Public Works.
It's at Public Works.
Erie and Mission.
Yeah. It's 161 Erie Street. It's right down Mission Street, down mm-hmm. an alleyway, right over by the Armory.
Oh, like, okay.
Right over by the Armory. Right. Just walk around in that neighborhood, and if you see people in animal costumes, you just follow them. You follow them, and you
follow their tail.
The party. Yeah, if you go to burnless.com, burnlesque.
Yes.
If you go there, you can find the ticket link and everything. They're still live now. They're 15, then like charge on top, or else it's 20 at the door tomorrow night. And if you don't have a costume and you're just hearing about it right now, don't worry. I bought so many masks.
Oh, you can
feather
hook people up with masks.
Foam masks. I got little like kitty cat fuzzy ears for people mm-hmm. to put on tails. We'll have face painting there. It's gonna be a good time.
Cool. So tell me more about like the mission of SVCI and like how people can get involved. I know that you just finished another round of training people. And you're not just sex positive. There's this new idea, the sex neutral.
Sex neutral.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Sex neutral, I mean, it's less about cheerleading people and like, yeah, anal
Go
sex.
Go have
you
sex,
love it.
You
just
can
do
it.
It's going to be awesome, you can do right. it. And just going, so how you feel about that? It's just, you know, trying to help the person figure out where they're at, give them information.
Be like, if you want to try it, you may not want to, that's okay.
Yeah.
But if you do want to try it, you want to use lube, you want to talk to your partner, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Doesn't have to hurt.
Yeah.
And that's nice because it's really non-judgmental either way. It's not pushing, it's not pulling, but it's not laying any kind of trip down on people.
Yeah.
They can be who they are.
Yeah. Dr. Queen's stories about manning the SVCI hotline are so entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an entertaining time.
And touching, you know, like I imagine like how many people's lives you could really change. It's hard to get sex education. It's hard to find someone that's safe to talk about sex, you know, and then you have people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week that you can just call up and be like, is this normal?
Shoot, I needed this when I was 16.
Right.
I could have come out a little bit happier. Yeah,
well, totally. I kind of wonder how it's changed for people who are 16 in this day and age.
Oh my God, with Facebook, can you imagine being an adolescent with everything being online?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I had the internet. We just had like message boards.
Right.
When I was like 12 or 13 and we could go, you had your AOL online CD that would come in the mail. And and if you were smart enough, you could figure out how to get away off of their like home search page and just like find addresses to go through and find external search engines to search off of.
Right.
I can sort of imagine it, but Facebook is like a whole nother level.
I think it brings the social Darwinism like out, and then also the long-lasting negative effects of bad choices. It might make it a little bit more
Maybe, but maybe everybody will become more accepting of Hopefully, everyone else's bad yeah. choices, because if somebody has one weird picture of them somewhere, there's probably also one of you.
Right.
And maybe the more that people realize that, the less that they'll judge.
We're all weirdos. We yeah. are.
Yeah.
We're all doing weird stuff, and it's okay.
Transparency is the word of the day.
Right. The party is tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, 9 p.m. at mm-hmm. Public Works.
Mm-hmm. It's called
$20 at
Burlesque.
Burlesque. There's going to be a life-size Connect 4 board. And we're painting. You know that game, Connect 4?
I wish I did.
It's 6 foot tall. Uh-huh. And like 6 feet wide, and the playing pieces are about the size of a record.
Uh-huh.
And my friend who built it has given me permission to spray all the playing pieces. Mm. And they're like red and black playing pieces. And I was thinking about it. I'm like, well, we got to make them animals. So we're going to make animal stencils. I'm like, what animals can fight? And I was like, ooh, let's do Mega Shark versus Giant Squid. Have you guys seen that movie?
Yes.
With Deborah Gibson?
Wait, no, I haven't.
What? It's based in San Francisco in Japan. It was a
really?
Super low budget to the point of being so cheesy.
Oh, wow.
So cheesy. But it's so cheesy, it's like almost
You'll have
brilliant.
To add that to your Netflix.
Yeah, you should watch it.
Versus Giant Squid.
Mm-hmm. Mega Shark versus Giant Squid.
Could I get that with some lasers, please?
Yeah, no, at one point, the Mega Shark takes a chomp on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
That's yeah. important. Should I plug your website, thesexademic.wordpress.com?
Yes. It's not going to be there for much longer. It's
going
to be moving to www.thesexademic.com.
That's very efficient.
We're working on the back end. We're going to switch it over in a little bit. It's mm-hmm. just kind of been between doing this event, also having a day job on top of everything, and then planning for the class that's starting on Thursday.
Tell me more about the class.
Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer cultures and society.
At San Francisco State University.
At San Francisco State. It's already full. The wait list is already full. Sorry, guys.
I know. Ad sticker for
yeah,
you,
come, well, no,
dear listener.
Come
to class anyway.
If anyone's listening and is at SF State and wants to try and take the class, you know, totally come to the first few sessions if you have the time, because people will end up dropping. I mean, it's going to be a really interesting class. But it's also going to be kind of difficult.
She says with a little twinkle in her eye. What are some of the things you're going to be talking about?
We are going to be talking about kind of early emergence of political struggles. We're going to be talking about...
You mean gay rights wasn't just invented in the 70s?
No, it was not.
No way.
No. No, it was not. We're going to be talking about, you know, concepts of sexual behavior versus ideas of sexual identity, how people and why people need to make cultures be out of their sexual behavior, why they need these identities, how identities have been shaped within the U.S. political context.
Cool.
Yeah.
Jesse Fisher, thank you so much for coming on Sexploration with Monica.
Very glad to be here. Thank you for
yeah,
having me.
And we will look at thesexademic.com shortly, or is it sexademic.com?
Thesexademic.com.
Okay, thesexademic.com.
If you go there, it'll lead you to the other site. So
okay, good.
Thesexademic.com is fine. You can find me on Twitter at thesexademic.
Good. Rock and roll nurse, always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Backspins, 80s next week, 6 yep. to 8, Studio 2B.
Yeah, you can do some of that 80s dancing if you want.
Hey.
But then you got to go hardcore.
Yeah, well, I need some Aquanet first. This is Sexploration with Monica. You can download free podcasts at sexplorationwithmonica.com.